All right. So have you ever like felt like drowning in paperwork and you pull out an insurance policy or a loan agreement or maybe even that online subscription you barely remember even signing up for? And it's all just like a jumble of legal jargon.
Yeah.
Contracts, right.
Yeah.
They can be pretty intimidating, but they're also like totally essential to just like navigating our everyday lives.
For sure.
So today, we're going on a deep dive into the world of contracts, and we're going to be specifically focusing on those fascinating and sometimes like really quirky insurance contracts that you've shared with us.
Right.
Our trusty guide for this journey is P&C Chapter 2, Basics of Contracts. And we'll break down like all the essentials and uncover those hidden clauses you might have totally missed.
Okay.
And by the end, you'll be able to face those daunting legal documents with like way more confidence. And trust me, there are some surprises along the way. Did you know that insurance contracts have like their own set of rules that make them totally unique? Get ready to learn why paying your friend's car insurance wouldn't work, even if they let you borrow the car all the time.
Interesting. It's true. Insurance contracts definitely have a certain mystique about them. People often just like sign them without truly understanding the intricacies, and that can lead to some pretty unexpected consequences down the road.
Exactly. So to make sure we're all on the same page, let's start with the fundamentals. Our source material introduces this acronym, COAL, a handy way to remember the five essential elements of any legal contract. Just consider it your cheat sheet for like decoding these legal puzzles.
I like that, a cheat sheet.
Yeah.
It's a brilliant tool for simplifying what can honestly seem really overwhelming at first. COAL stands for consideration, offer and acceptance, legal purpose, and competent parties. Each element plays a crucial role in determining whether an agreement is like actually legally binding.
Okay, so let's break down these elements like one by one, starting with consideration. What exactly does that mean in the context of a contract?
So consideration, it basically boils down to the exchange of value at the heart of a contract. Think of it like a trade. Each party has to bring something valuable to the table for the agreement to even be valid.
So it's not just about signing a piece of paper. There has to be like a real exchange of something meaningful.
Absolutely. In a typical sales contract, for example, your consideration is the money that you pay, and the seller's consideration is the goods or services they provide. Without this exchange, there's no contract.
Makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
So how does this principle of consideration apply to insurance contracts specifically?
In insurance, you're essentially entering into an agreement with the insurance company to protect yourself from like potential financial losses. And your consideration, it takes two forms: paying your premiums and being truthful in the information that you provide on your application.
So it's like a promise backed by both money and honesty.
Precisely. In return for your premium payments and accurate information, the insurer promises to cover specific losses outlined in the policy should they occur. It's like a two-way street built on trust and a very clear exchange of value.
Okay, I'm starting to see how this all fits together. What about offer and acceptance? Does that literally mean one party offers something and the other accepts it?
Well, it's a bit more nuanced than that. There's like a dance of back and forth that occurs to reach that mutual agreement. One party makes an offer and the other party can accept, reject, or propose a counteroffer, changing the original terms.
So there's room for negotiation in this stage. It's not just a take it or leave it situation.
It really depends on the type of contract and the parties involved, but in many cases, there's definitely room for discussion and adjustments until both sides are totally satisfied with the terms.
That's good to know. Can you give an example of offer and acceptance within the world of insurance?
Sure. Imagine you apply for car insurance online. You fill out all your details and the website generates a quote, and that quote is the insurer's initial offer. But then let's say they discover you have a recent speeding ticket that they didn't know about. They might come back with a revised offer, a higher premium due to the increased risk. You then have the choice to accept their counteroffer or seek out a better deal somewhere else.
Got it. So the agreement isn't finalized until both sides have agreed to the exact terms of the policy, including the premium amount. It's like a negotiation until that final handshake, even if it's a digital one.
Exactly. Now let's move on to legal purpose, the third element of our COAL framework. This one is pretty straightforward.
Okay, so legal purpose probably means the contract has to be for something legal, right?
You hit the nail on the head. For a contract to be enforceable, it cannot involve any illegal activities or go against public policy. Trying to ensure a shipment of smuggled goods, for example, wouldn't hold up in court.
Right. That makes sense. But what about insurance in general? What's the legal purpose behind these types of contracts?
In the case of insurance, the legal purpose is the transfer and management of risk. You're essentially paying the insurance company to take on the financial burden should a covered loss occur. It's a way to protect yourself from potential financial ruin, and that's certainly a legitimate and valuable purpose in the eyes of the law.
So it's like sharing the burden of uncertainty. Instead of shouldering the entire risk yourself, you're transferring a portion of that risk to the insurer in exchange for paying premiums.
I like it. It's like a partnership of sorts.
That's a great way to put it. Now, the final element of COAL, competent parties, might seem obvious, but it's crucial for ensuring the validity of a contract.
So this basically means that everyone involved in the contract needs to be mentally capable of understanding the terms and agreeing to them.
Exactly. The law requires that all parties entering into a contract must be of legal age and sound mind. They cannot be under duress or undue influence, and they must be free from any mental impairment that would prevent them from comprehending the agreement.
So no signing contracts after a wild night out. Got it. Precisely. All joking aside, the law aims to protect individuals who may not have the capacity to make informed decisions when entering into contracts. It ensures that everyone is on a level playing field and that agreements are made with genuine consent and understanding.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. So we've covered the four elements of COL: consideration, offer and acceptance, legal purpose, and competent parties. They might seem like simple concepts, but they're like the bedrock of any legally sound contract.
Absolutely. Understanding these fundamentals really empowers you to approach contracts with confidence, knowing the key ingredients that make them enforceable.
It's like having a secret decoder ring for the legal world. But there's more to uncover, right? We mentioned earlier that insurance contracts have some unique twists and turns that set them apart from other types of contracts.
You're right. And those unique characteristics are what we'll be exploring next. Get ready to dive into the fascinating world of adhesion, aleatory contracts, and more.
This is where things get really interesting. Okay, so we've laid that foundation with COAL. Let's dive into the fascinating world of insurance contracts. Like we mentioned before, they have these special features that make them really stand out from other agreements you might encounter in daily life.
You're absolutely right. And these unique aspects can sometimes really trip people up if they're not aware of them.
So let's unpack those, starting with this concept of adhesion mentioned in our source material. It sounds a bit sticky, right?
It kind of is. Adhesion refers to the fact that insurance policies are typically drafted entirely by the insurance company, and you as the insured pretty much have to adhere to the terms they've set. There's not a whole lot of room for negotiation.
So it's like a take it or leave it scenario. But why is that allowed? It seems a bit one-sided.
Well, it's based on the idea that insurance companies, they have the expertise to assess and manage risks, and they need to standardize their policies to operate efficiently. However, this also means that courts tend to interpret any ambiguity in the policy language in favor of the insured, since they didn't have a hand in writing it.
Okay, that makes sense. It's like a balancing act to protect both sides. So let's say I agree to the terms and sign on the dotted line. What's next on our list of quirky characteristics?
Next up is aleatory, a concept that emphasizes the element of chance that's inherent in insurance contracts. It basically means the value exchange between the insured and the insurer can be unequal depending on whether a covered loss actually occurs.
Unequal. Can you elaborate on that a bit?
Of course. So imagine you diligently pay your car insurance premiums for 5 years, and thankfully you never have an accident. In this case, you've paid more to the insurer than they've paid back to you.
But what if, the opposite happens? What if I have a major accident right after I get a new policy?
Then you could receive a payout far exceeding the premiums you've paid. That's that aleatory nature in action. It's a gamble, but one that provides crucial financial protection when you need it most.
So it's all about balancing that risk. You might pay for years without needing to file a claim, but knowing you're covered if disaster strikes, it provides peace of mind, which has its own value.
Exactly. Now let's move on to two interrelated principles that are super crucial for maintaining trust in insurance agreements: utmost good faith and reasonable expectation.
These sound like essential ingredients for a healthy insurance relationship. Tell me more about how they work.
So utmost good faith essentially means that both you, the insured, and the insurer are expected to be completely transparent and honest with each other. It's about disclosing all material facts that could influence the insurer's decision to offer coverage or determine premiums.
So it's like a foundation of trust built on honesty.
Mm.
No hiding crucial information that could affect the agreement.
Exactly. And closely tied to utmost good faith, is the principle of reasonable expectation, which suggests that both parties should be able to reasonably expect the other to act in good faith and uphold their end of the bargain.
So it's a two-way street of trust and transparency. Can you give an example of how these principles might play out in a real-life situation?
Absolutely. Let's say you're applying for homeowner's insurance and you fail to mention that your basement has flooded twice in the past 5 years.
That sounds like something the insurer would probably want to know.
It certainly is. By withholding this information, you'd be violating the principle of utmost good faith. And this could potentially void your policy if a future claim is linked to basement flooding. The insurer might argue they wouldn't have offered you coverage or they would have charged a higher premium had they known about the previous floods.
So it's not just about, like, intentional dishonesty. Even forgetting to mention something important can have serious consequences.
That's right. It really highlights the importance of being thorough and meticulous when providing information to your insurer.
Okay. I'm starting to see how these unique aspects of insurance contracts really do set them apart. What's next on our list?
Next, we have unilateral, which might sound a bit confusing at first, but it's actually a pretty simple concept. It means, though, in an insurance contract, only one party, the insurer, is legally obligated to perform.
Wait, so does that mean I have no obligations under the contract?
Not exactly. You have the obligation to pay your premiums to keep the policy active, but unlike the insurer, you're free to stop paying and walk away from the contract at any time. You're not legally bound to continue the agreement.
But the insurer can't just, like, decide to back out whenever they want.
No, they can't. As long as you're upholding your end of the bargain by paying premiums and you haven't violated any terms, the insurer is legally obligated to fulfill their promises that are outlined in the policy.
So it's like a one-way street of legal obligation.
That's a great way to put it. Now let's move on to another distinguishing feature of insurance contracts. They're personal.
Personal? What does that even mean in this context?
It means that these contracts are tailored to the specific individual or household being insured. They're not easily transferable to someone else.
So I couldn't just lend my car insurance policy to my friend, even if I let them borrow my car.
Exactly. Each insurance contract is based on a risk assessment of the specific individual or family being insured, taking into account factors like their driving history, age, location, and more. These factors can vary significantly from person to person, making it basically impossible to just transfer coverage to someone else.
That makes sense. It's like a custom-made suit tailored to fit a specific person. You can't just hand it off to somebody else and expect it to fit perfectly.
That's a great analogy. Now let's explore another characteristic. Conditional.
Conditional. Does that mean there are, like, strings attached?
In a way, yes. Insurance contracts often come with certain conditions that must be met for the policy to be enforced and for a claim to be paid.
Okay, that makes sense. Can you give, like, an example of a condition in an insurance contract?
Absolutely. Let's say your car is damaged in an accident and you file a claim. The insurer might require you to provide a police report, photos of the damage and repair estimates before they'll even process your claim.
So it's not enough to just say, my car is damaged, pay up. There are specific steps and requirements that need to be followed.
Exactly. These conditions help the insurer verify the validity of the claim and ensure that they're paying out for legitimate losses.
Okay, I'm starting to feel like a contract detective uncovering all these, like, hidden clauses and conditions. What's the final characteristic we need to discuss?
The last one is indemnity, a foundational principle that guides how insurance payouts work.
Indemnity sounds familiar. Refresh my memory. What does that mean again?
Indemnity means that the purpose of insurance is to restore you, the insured, to your pre-loss financial state, no more, no less. It's not about profiting from a loss. It's about getting you back to where you were financially before the incident occurred.
So it's like a safety net, not a trampoline. It helps you bounce back to where you were, but not higher.
That's a perfect way to put it. If your house burns down, for example, the insurance payout should cover the cost of rebuilding your home, but it won't make you richer than you were before the fire.
This has been incredibly helpful. We've covered a lot of ground, from the basic elements of a contract, COAL, to these unique characteristics that make insurance contracts tick.
And we're not done yet. There's still more to explore in the realm of insurance contracts, including those trickier concepts like representations, misrepresentations, warranties, and even those gray areas of concealment and fraud.
All right, I'm ready to dive even deeper. All right, welcome back to our deep dive into the world of contracts. We've journeyed from the fundamental building blocks of agreements all the way to the unique quirks of insurance policies.
And now we're stepping into some trickier territory. You ready to navigate those gray areas where things aren't always so black and white?
Absolutely. Our source material mentions representations, misrepresentations and warranties. These sound like some key concepts to really understand, especially when it comes to insurance.
You're spot on. Let's start with representations. These are statements you, the applicant, make to the insurer, believing them to be true. Think about filling out an insurance application. You're providing details about yourself, your property, your driving history, and so on. Those are your representations.
So it's about presenting information to the best of your knowledge, even if it might not be perfectly accurate, like in every tiny detail.
That's right. Now, a misrepresentation occurs when a statement turns out to be false. But here's the crucial point. Not all misrepresentations are created equal.
What do you mean? Isn't any false statement a problem?
To have a real impact on the insurance contract, a misrepresentation needs to be material. This means the false information would have, like, significantly influenced the insurer's decision to offer coverage or determine the premium.
Okay, so a small unintentional error probably wouldn't be a huge deal. Well, what if someone deliberately hides something crucial, like a major accident they caused?
That's a great example of a material misrepresentation. Let's say someone applies for car insurance and forgets to mention they had their license suspended last year for reckless driving. If the insurer discovers this later, they could potentially void the policy, arguing they wouldn't have taken on the risk had they known the truth.
So honesty really is the best policy, especially when dealing with insurance. What about warranties? How do they differ from representations?
A warranty is a step beyond a representation. It's a guarantee, a promise that a particular condition is true and will remain true throughout the entire contract period if a warranty is breached. It can have serious consequences, potentially even voiding the entire policy.
That sounds intense. Can you give an example of a warranty in an insurance contract?
Imagine a business owner getting insurance for their warehouse as part of the policy they warrant that they'll have a fully functional sprinkler system in place at all times if a fire breaks out and it's discovered that the sprinklers were faulty or turned off. The insurer could deny the claim based on the breach of warranty.
So it's not just about being truthful. It's also about upholding your end of the bargain by maintaining certain conditions that were agreed upon.
Precisely. Warranties add an extra layer of responsibility for the insured.
All right, I'm starting to get the hang of these legal intricacies, but things can get even more complicated, right? What about concealment and fraud?
You're right. Those concepts delve into some more intentional acts of deception. Concealment is the deliberate act of withholding material information from the insurer. It's like hiding a crucial piece of the puzzle that could affect their assessment of the risk.
So it's not just about making a false statement. It's about deliberately keeping something important under wraps.
Exactly. Let's say someone's applying for health insurance and they know they have a pre-existing condition, but they choose not to disclose it. That's a classic example of concealment, and it could have serious repercussions if the insurer discovers it later on.
It seems like concealment is driven by a desire to get a better deal, maybe lower premiums or avoid being denied coverage altogether.
That's often the motivation. Now, fraud takes things a step further. It involves intentionally deceiving the insurer for financial gain. Think about staging a car accident to file a false claim or exaggerating the value of stolen goods to receive a bigger payout.
So fraud is about deliberately trying to cheat the system for personal profit.
That's the essence of it. Fraud is not only unethical, but it's also illegal and can lead to serious penalties, including fines and even imprisonment.
Wow, that's a strong reminder that honesty and integrity are paramount in the insurance world.
Absolutely. Now let's shift gears a little and explore two final concepts that can be a bit confusing, but are really essential for understanding the nuances of insurance contracts. Waiver and estoppel.
Okay, I'm all ears. Break it down for me.
Think of waivers as the insurer intentionally giving up a known right. It's like saying, we don't need that information or we're not going to enforce that particular condition.
So it's like a voluntary relinquishment of something they're entitled to. Can you give an example?
Imagine an insurer issues a homeowner's policy without even asking about the age of the roof later. There's a claim for roof damage, and the insurer tries to deny it, saying they wouldn't have covered a roof that old.
That seems unfair. They never even asked about the roof's age in the first place.
Exactly. In this situation, a court might rule that the insurer waived their right to inquire about the roof's age by not requesting that information up front.
Okay, that makes sense. So where does estoppel come into play?
Estoppel builds on the concept of waiver. It prevents the insurer from going back on their word, essentially saying, you can't change your mind. Now it protects the insured from being penalized for something the insurer previously overlooked or didn't consider to be all that important.
So in our roof example, the insurer couldn't later try to deny a claim based on the roof's age because They already waived their right to inquire about it. It's like they're stuck with their initial decision.
You got it. Waiver and estoppel are there to ensure fairness and prevent insurers from taking advantage of policyholders by basically changing the rules of the game midway through.
This entire conversation about the complexities of insurance contracts has been incredibly insightful. It's amazing how many layers there are to these agreements that we often sign without, like, fully understanding.
You're right, but now armed with this knowledge, you're much better equipped to navigate the insurance world with confidence. Remember, it's all about asking questions, reading the fine print, and understanding your rights and responsibilities as a policyholder.
So for our listeners out there who might be feeling a bit overwhelmed by all this legal jargon, what's like the key takeaway? What's the most important thing for them to remember?
Knowledge is power. By understanding the fundamentals of contracts and the unique characteristics of insurance agreements, you can protect your interests, make more informed decisions, and avoid potential pitfalls.
It's about being proactive and advocating for yourself. Don't be afraid to seek clarification if something is unclear, or to consult with a legal professional if you have some specific concerns.
Exactly. And remember, contracts are everywhere in our lives, from buying a cup of coffee to securing a mortgage. The principles we've discussed today can help you navigate these agreements with confidence, no matter what form they take.
Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive into the world of contracts. We hope you found it informative and empowering. Until next time, stay curious and remember, knowledge is your best defense.